Inbound in front court. No timeouts remaining. Here's Curry for three. Thompson for three. And that'll wrap it. The Boston Celtics with a dramatic win over the defending champion, Golden State Warriors.
Be honest. Did you think the Celtics would be this good this soon? Especially without Gordon Hayward? The Celtics make it 14 wins in a row. It's Friday, November 17th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The Celtics won their 14th straight game. On Thursday evening, they defeated the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors at TD Garden 92-88 in what was a pulsating game. Now, helping me break this game down, we bring in Jay King. He's the Celtics reporter for Mass Live and co-host of the fantastic Locked On Celtics podcast. Jay, thanks for coming in to Season Ticket.
Thanks for having me, man.
So my takeaway from that game between the Celtics and the Warriors, the teams with the two best records in the NBA, was that the Celtics' defense is for real. We knew going in, Jay, what the numbers were. The Celtics had the best defense in the NBA. They were allowing the fewest points per game in the NBA at 94.5. But you look at Golden State, that's an elite offense, and it's been an elite offense for 4 years. And I think Golden State missed some shots they normally make, but the Celtics definitely bothered them, definitely sped them up. I compare it sort of to, like, in the NFL, a quarterback who has a really, really ferocious pass rush coming at him, and it speeds him up. And then later in the game, he has open passes, and he just misses because he's anticipating there's going to be a guy in his face. That's what I thought happened last night with the Celtics and their defense and the Warriors.
Yeah, and you look at the numbers, they're kind of crazy. The Warriors, that was their lowest offensive rating with Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry in the lineup ever. It was the first time all season, first time since December 2016, Stephen Curry scored in single digits. Like, the Celtics, you saw them lock up the Raptors, and you saw them lock up the Hornets, and you thought this defense could be really, really good. And then you see them against the Warriors, and you're like, okay, it's time to stop saying could be. It's time to stop saying this is just the early season. It's time to take away all the asterisks, all that. This Celtics defense has been amazing throughout the first 16 games now. 14 straight wins with no Gordon Hayward. Their offense ranks 22nd in the league, and they can't be beaten. It's crazy.
So holding Golden State to 88 points is, that's like immaculate, to be honest with you. But this was the sixth time this season the Celtics have held an opponent below 90 points. That matches their total doing that from all of last year with the team with IT and Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. And I think when they sort of broke up that team for this one, one of the big concerns was, oh, what are they going to lose on the defensive end? You know, no Jay Crowder, who can defend all these positions. Avery Bradley, one of the best on-ball defenders in the NBA. And I think they're actually better defensively, no knock on those guys, but because they're more athletic and they're longer, and they're sort of the answer to Golden State's positionless offense is like positionless defense from the Celtics.
Yeah, and if you talk to the Celtics front office, they're not surprised that they're better defensively. But they're certainly surprised that they're as good as they are. When they reshaped this team this summer, they knew that they were getting longer. They were getting more athletic. You know, they're super young, but all their young guys have played defense. Jaylen Brown is out there blocking Kevin Durant and stripping Stephen Curry. And Jason Tatum has played like a 10-year veteran. And, you know, all the rookies, Daniel Tice, Semi Ojeleye, up and down the roster, the Celtics have really nailed a lot of moves. Even Shane Larkin, he's won them a couple games. And they're long. They can switch everything when they have Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Al Horford. Like, they literally can switch 2 through 5 against any team. And that's a huge deal. And it takes teams out of their offense. And I think you saw that with Golden State. They kind of warriors the Warriors in some sense. Like, yeah. That's what the Warriors have always done when they go to their death lineup. The Celtics put a run on the death lineup. Nobody ever does that, and they did it in the first half and then the second half.
And just for people that maybe don't follow basketball as closely as you do, can you explain what the death lineup is for the Warriors?
The death lineup is when they have Draymond Green at center with Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry, Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson. It's a lineup that has, over the past 3 years, really turned them into one of the greatest teams ever. That's been the difference maker, probably one of the best lineups in NBA history. And they just spread teams out, and they switch, and they really dominate a lot of teams. The Celtics did that to them, and it was weird to watch because that never happens to the death lineup.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the great thing about that lineup is, as you said, you know, it's a small ball lineup. It's all guys who can handle the ball and shoot, and normally that's a problem for defenses, but it wasn't a problem for the Celtics. I thought, Jay, the Celtics turned this game into a rock fight. And this game was played on not only their turf at TD Garden, but also on their terms. The key part of the game was the 19-0 run in the third quarter. The Celtics were down 66-49. They took a 68-66 lead with 53.8 seconds left on a plastic man layup by Jason Tatum, whose arms just do not end.
Into the corner to Tatum. Tatum on the drive. Lays it home. Celtics with a 68-66 lead.
And they ended up tied after three quarters at 68-68. But that run was so huge because it looked like they might get blown out of their own building. And the guy who sparked that run was Jaylen Brown.
Here's Brown for three. Jaylen Brown again.
He had a great night, 22 points and 7 rebounds, but he was dealing with some personal tragedy.
Yeah, it was really remarkable what he did. So the night before the game, Jaylen Brown's best friend passed away. And a few hours before the game, he didn't know whether he was going to play. He spoke to his best friend's mother, who inspired him, as he said, to go out there and give it a shot. And he played inspired basketball. Probably his best game ever, considering what he did defensively on Kevin Durant, considering the 22 points he scored in a game where points were really at a premium, considering everything he did to bring the Celtics back, not once, but twice. The second quarter, they're down 16. He brings them back. Third quarter, they're down 17. He scores 10 points in a 19-0 run. And he was just doing everything for them. There was one sequence where he hit a three, got blocked, rebounded his own miss, finished it, then raced back, blocked a Klay Thompson dunk.
At the rim, yeah. Went up and blocked his dunk. That doesn't happen a lot.
Nice pass. Thompson blocked from behind by Brown. Doing it at both ends.
It was probably a foul, but we won't talk about that. and then, I mean, he was just unbelievable. And I thought it was just as remarkable that he was able to talk about his best friend after the game.
My best friend passed last night, and it was tough. To kind of accept it, everybody was kind of in shock. But, you know, I knew coming in today that he wanted me to play. I kind of was hard getting my thoughts together, but after talking to his mom and his family, they inspired me to come out and play because I wasn't in any shape to come out. I didn't want to leave my room.
It was really remarkable what he did and the poise he showed. He's 21 years old. And to deal with that and to deal with it the way he did was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I certainly have a lot of respect for Jaylen Brown and condolences to Jaylen Brown and the family of Trevin Steed, his best friend who passed away. When you look at it from a basketball standpoint, and obviously there are more important things in life than basketball, as Jaylen was able to illustrate for us after the game. But from a basketball standpoint, that was another one of my takeaways from the game last night, Jay. The Celtics young guys didn't back away from the moment. In fact, I thought Jaylen Brown was trying to and did rise to the moment as a second-year player. I thought Jason Tatum in the fourth quarter, you know, he looked a little bit intimidated, I thought, through the first maybe two and three quarters. But the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, he looked like the Jason Tatum we've seen all year long. I think that was one of the questions going into this game. Like, are these young guys really ready for the Warriors? You know, for the NBA champions, for a team that has won two championships in 3 years, and as you mentioned, is one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yeah, I mean, what Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have done this year has been far, far beyond what I expected from those two guys. Jaylen Brown turned 21 after the season started. Jason Tatum's 19 years old, and they've both just been so solid. They've been great defensively. They score timely buckets. They've just done so much for the Celtics. It's been, I didn't expect that from them. I thought when they lost Jay Crowder, they were going to lose a lot on the wing, and those guys have both been better.
Wow, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, Jay Crowder, it hasn't really clicked in Cleveland. And then I think a lot of people, myself included, thought when Gordon Hayward went down, like, okay, the Celtics are playing to be the second-best team in the East, and they're the best team. I mean, Steph Curry last night was sort of joking. You know, he was asked the question I was there about, do you think you're coming back here in June? Because they play twice a year. It's a home and home. So the only way you're going to see Golden State again is if it's in the NBA Finals. And somebody asked Steph, oh, do you know, back here in June? He sort of joked. He said, oh, I heard the weather's great here in June. So I thought that was like a pretty cool thing that happened. In terms of talking about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I think this is a kind of a fun debate that's now happening among Celtics fans. Which one of these guys is more important? Which one of these guys is better? And let's say you had to make a trade and it's like for Anthony Davis or Porzingis or Karl-Anthony Towns, and the other team says, give us Tatum or Brown. Which guy would you trade?
I would trade Brown. I would keep Tatum. I think he's more efficient. I think he's going to end up being a better offensive player. I think Jaylen Brown, athletically, there are very few players who rival him across the league. But Jason Tatum's just so smooth. He's 19 years old. He's already super efficient, super smart. He can shoot. He does basically everything. I think he's going to end up being an absolute monster for the Celtics. Jaylen Brown has a chance too, but I think Tatum's just further along with his skill development. So at this point, I would choose him.
So I actually disagree with you, but I agree with a lot of what you said, if that makes sense. So I would take Jaylen Brown. I wish if you could combine these two guys, you would already have a super, like you'd have like Kobe Bryant. If you could take Jaylen Brown's athleticism and Jason Tatum's made for the NBA, like ready-made offensive game. But I would say Jaylen only for this reason, just his competitiveness, the way he rose to the occasion last night. And you just can't teach that athleticism. Like how often does Kevin Durant get a jumper blocked?
Yeah, never. But they're both competitors. Those two, they both compete. They're both poised. They're both mature far beyond their years.
Look, hopefully they can keep both guys.
Yeah, they look pretty good next to each other.
It's one of those like high-class hoops problems, right? Like, oh, who's better, Jaylen or Jason? It's like that's the type of problem you want to have. Like that's a high-class problem for Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, and the Celtics. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here. When we come back, more with Jay King from the Locked On Celtics podcast and Mass Live. Jay's going to explain how Marcus Smart had a huge impact on this game despite not hitting a single shot from the field last night. That's next. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Jay King. He's a reporter for MassLive.com and the co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. So you have to explain this to me, Jay, because I think a lot of people who are not huge hoops fans look at the night that Marcus Smart had last night. 0 of 7 from the field, 0 of 3 from the three-point line, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. He had one point in the game. But I want you to tell me why he was actually huge when it came to this Celtics victory.
So the Celtics are down 16, second quarter, and everything's going wrong. They can't score. They aren't stopping the Warriors like they should. And Marcus Smart's on the court. And he's been horrible. he's taking bad shots. He's missed a lot of shots. And all of a sudden, he just takes over defensively. He gets a steal, cuts off Andre Iguodala, forces a turnover, slides over to Kevin Looney, forces another turnover. All of a sudden, it's a 16-0 run, and Marcus Smart's been involved in almost every defensive play. He had that huge block of Zaza Pachulia earlier.
Pachulia beating. Oh! The Celtics beat down court, and Marcus Smart is able to come up with a rejection.
He just does so many things to help you win. He chases down with 2 minutes left, an offensive rebound, saves a possession that ends up keeping it alive for a Kyrie Irving score to go ahead. He does so many things, and he has not shot the ball well at all. He's been ridiculously bad shooting the ball this year.
Isn't he like the worst shooter in the NBA of people that attempt like 10 or more shots
in NBA history?
In NBA history, yeah.
In NBA history.
He's at what, 28% now? Actually, probably went down last night, right?
28.1% I think he's at for the season, which is abominable. And and still, every time he's on the court, good things happen. It's incredible how good he is at everything else to overcome how bad he's shot the ball this year.
It's really interesting because you wouldn't think when you're talking about a professional basketball player, you would say shooting is not really his forte.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not. And when you look at the box score, it's hard to look at it and be able to extrapolate his impact. You sort of have to watch the game and see the plays that he makes, and they don't show up, those aggressive hustle plays. I think that's why that's like such a tough decision for the Celtics in terms of what they do with him with the contract, because he does have an impact on their winning. But if you put him on, let's say, the Sacramento Kings, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they win any more games. And it's not like he's not having the same impact, but you can have this impact he has, but at the end of the day, you still need to be on a team where there's other guys that can score because you really can't. And like he's had that the last couple of years with Isaiah Thomas. He has it now with Kyrie Irving and Al and Jason Tatum. So you can do these things, and on a winning team, they really show up. But on a losing team, you're going to look at it and say, he's doing all the same stuff. He's the same guy with the same competitiveness. Why isn't it impacting our winning? It's because you still need someone to put the ball in the basket. And that, to me, is really sort of the quandary of what you do with him when he reaches restricted free agency.
Yeah, and his contract is going to be a weird situation, I think, because all it's going to take is one team to fall in love with what he does and offer him a huge offer sheet. And could be tough for the Celtics to match because they're going to be luxury taxpayers down the road. They're going to have a huge, huge team salary years in the future. Kyrie Irving in a couple of years will be due for a huge raise. At some point, you know, Tatum, Brown, those guys will be worth more money, or whoever they trade for, whatever the case. They're going to have a very expensive roster. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do with Smart. He's not helping himself by shooting 28% from the field, but he's still helping the Celtics. And it really is remarkable to watch a guy that poor at putting the ball in the basket still help a team at the professional level, at the NBA level. He's just so good at everything else.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you had to guess, which way do you think the Celtics are leaning? Like, is there any way they give him, like, the Gary Harris contract? Gary Harris, the guard for the Denver Nuggets, got a deal that's $21 million a year, $84 million overall?
Probably not, because okay, it would be tough to pay Smart that type of money. But as long as he's in Boston, he's helping the team, even when he does some bad, bad things with the basketball.
You mentioned Al Horford there. I think that there were some people who thought after the first season of Al being a Celtic that he wasn't worth that max deal. And you watch him now, it's not just the way he plays, which is fantastic because he has a great feel for the game, but he's putting up numbers, 18 points and 11 rebounds. Another great shooting night for Al on a night when the Celtics didn't shoot well at all. They shot 32.9% as a team, which is absolutely brutal. And you had the note that they were the first team since February 11, 2015, to win a game when shooting less than 33% from the field. That's in the entire NBA. But when you look at Al and what he's doing, why has it clicked for him this year? Is it just another year in the system, or is there something about his chemistry with Kyrie Irving that is allowing him to play better than he did with IT?
I think part of it is just another year in the system, another year to figure out how the Celtics are using him. And I think part of it is just his overall evolution. You know, 3 years ago, he never shot three-pointers. And now he's being asked to do that, and it took him a little while to extend his range that far. If you look at his numbers, he's always been an elite mid-range jump shooter. Career-wise, he's 47% from mid-range, which is almost as good as anybody in the league. Well, now he's doing that from behind the arc, and that's really raised his efficiency. It's made it tougher for teams to close out on him. It's made it easier for him to play make for other guys, and he's never played better basketball than he has this season. He's rebounding. He's defending every night. He's taking on great players. He's shut down Kristaps Porzingis, held Giannis to one of his worst games of the season. He's just done everything for these Celtics. To me, he's been the MVP so far for the Celtics this season. I think he has just been awesome, awesome, awesome this year. I would have him, if not all NBA, he's very close right now. He's been so good. And when you look at him, his contract, you looked at it when he first got it and you thought, oh, he might not be worth it at the end of it. Well, he's getting better. This is the best he's ever played. And so it looks like he will be worth the contract throughout the whole duration. He's just been really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with you on him being the MVP of this team, sort of the unsung hero. Once Gordon Hayward went down, he's shooting 58% from the field this year, which is unbelievable. Obviously, Al Horford had to step up when Gordon Hayward went down. You know, the young guys did as well. And we talked about that with Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Does Jason Tatum get this opportunity? Does he get the minutes that he's getting and the opportunity to grow, to be out on the court at the end of a game trying to close out the defending world champions like he had last night if Gordon Hayward doesn't get hurt?
I don't think he'd have quite as big a role. I think what we're seeing, though, is he's too good to keep on the bench. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, those guys, they're just too good. And I do think the one silver lining of losing Gordon Hayward on opening night is that Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they're not just getting the minutes, they're getting more touches. They're getting more opportunities. They're getting chances to develop that they wouldn't have had if Hayward, Kyrie Irving, and Al Horford were all in the court. And I think that's going to benefit them next year when Hayward comes back and those guys have had the chance to expand their games and do more things and guard better players and take on challenges that they wouldn't have been able to with Hayward in the lineup. So I'm excited to see what this team looks like when Gordon Hayward comes back. Obviously, you try to live in the moment. Celtics fans are really excited for the 14-game win streak, everything that's happening this year. But when you think about how this team will look with Hayward, it could be really, really dangerous.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you're right, that is the silver lining, those guys getting to grow. And that was my other sort of takeaway from last night, is that when the money was on the table, when it really mattered, you look out there and it's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are out there. And Jason Tatum hit the free throws that sealed the victory for the Celtics. That's a big moment for him. And the fact that Brad trusted those guys and put them out there in that circumstance, I think, says a lot about them and a lot about this 14-game winning streak. It's amazing. Like you said, live in the moment, Jay, right? And, you know, we are all living in the moment. But it is a little funny to me how quickly people have sort of moved on from the Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder Celtics. I mean, they were kicking and screaming when Danny Ainge broke up that team. There was a real emotional connection and bond between that team and the fan base. And I'm not going to say it's completely been erased, but I'm shocked that we're only 16 games into the season. And you don't hear anybody saying, oh, you know, there's no one pining for IT or saying like they shouldn't have broken up the team. It's almost like that era of basketball never happened.
It is kind of crazy. And I guess 14 straight wins will do that for you.
Yeah.
Especially a win against the Golden State Warriors.
Like a mind eraser.
Yeah. But like a lot has changed over the last 16 games. And Kyrie Irving has been good. And that's been a big part of it. And
he hates that mask, though.
He hates that mask.
Yeah, playing with the facial fractured. He hates that mask. He shot 416 last night. You could tell he wanted to chuck that thing into the stand.
I've never seen anyone hate a mask like he does. He took it off every chance he got. He would rip it off, like, in between plays. He wouldn't use it during warm-ups. And then he actually took it off during the game, even though the traders told him that was not recommended.
That's so funny.
I think his direct quote was, "It's my life."
Okay. All right. Yep. Yeah. I guess a YOLO situation for Kyrie when it comes to the mask. But it has been amazing how quickly the Celtics have gelled on offense and defense, and they've ripped off this 14-game winning streak. Jay, thanks for coming in to help us break this down.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We'll definitely have you back. So that's Jay King from MassLive.com and the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can find him on Twitter. His handle is @ByJKing. Also, we didn't have a chance to talk about it, but Jay King is by far the best pickup basketball player of any journalist that covers the Celtics. He's like the Kevin Durant of pickup basketball.
I'm washed up now, man.
No,
it's
you can,
over.
You can still ball. You can. He's being very, very modest. Jay, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Finally, the cheap seats. The NBA's age limit requires players to be 19 years of age and 1 year removed from their high school graduation to be eligible for the NBA draft. That forces players to become college basketball mercenaries, hoops Hessians, if you will. They're just treating college basketball as a way station on their way to the NBA. That has made the college game a transient one, as teams turn over the top talent each year. You find that your favorite college basketball team, their roster is unrecognizable. There are players you can't relate to or don't know the names of. It also removes all the pretense of the top freshman players being in college to actually get an education. It's more like a 5-month unpaid basketball internship. It also takes scholarships away from players who want to go to college to get an education and know they're not going to play professional basketball. It hurts the NBA game too, because teams that need instant impact stars that can change the fortune of their franchise are instead getting players who aren't fully formed and aren't ready to be the face of an NBA team. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver and NBA Players Union President Michelle Roberts met with the Commission on College Basketball on Thursday. That commission is a group that's looking at ways that the NBA and the college game can collaborate better. When they met, they discussed changing this rule, changing the age limit to 20 and letting the best high school players go straight to the NBA for instruction and development again, as they did with Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett, is a win-win for the college game and the professional one. That would be one and done for both levels. One W-O-N instead of O-N-E. And that's it for today's show. There are a few folks I'd like to thank for making this podcast possible. Season Ticket is produced by Steve Safran, Josh Schwartz, Scott Thurston, Joe Sullivan, Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Matthew Reed, and Brendan Coughlin. I'm Chris Gasper. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.